budget 2025, Carney's first budget, was a debt disaster. And government debt is spiraling out of control because government spending is spiraling out of control. And what does massive borrowing mean? Well, massive borrowing means that debt interest charges are now costing you more than $1 billion every single week, okay? Or think about it this way. The next time that you're standing out there in that checkout line, every single dollar that you pay in federal sales tax is going to pay interest on the federal debt. Government debt is spiraling out of control. Carney is using fake fiscal anchors, and we've got a bombshell report slicing through Carney's creative accounting. We've got a great show for you today, folks. The parliamentary budget officer just put out a bombshell report on Carney's first budget. Then we have the CTF's Chris Sims coming on the show. It'll be Clips with Chris to break down the taxpayer news you don't want to miss. But first, here's a clip of the parliamentary budget officer, Jason Jakes, on CTV dissecting the government's finances and the changing fiscal guardrails. Let's take a look.
So you still think the fiscal situation here is unsustainable?
I think the current fiscal situation, we moved into new territory. So based upon the previous government's fiscal anchors, it was a situation where the government, if they were targeting a stable or declining debt to GDP ratio, then there was very limited margin for error or room for maneuver. Now we're in a situation where the government makes no pretense about having a stable or declining debt to GDP ratio. We're in a new territory where it appears as if the government is making the argument that in comparison to other countries, we have room to spend. So because our debt levels are lower than some other countries, we can go out, we can borrow the money, and we could spend the money the next time that there's an economic shock and if we need to. And
do you think that's true? Pardon the interruption.
Oh, sure.
Do you think that's true? They say the IMF agrees. Do you think it's true?
I think hopefully the government can go out and borrow additional money at this point. It's not a question of borrowing the money. It's a question of what the money is fundamentally going to be spent on. And as somebody who's responsible for fiscal transparency, I need to point out that nobody has had this discussion. So during the 2025 election campaign, all major political parties identified a declining debt to GDP ratio as being the most important fiscal anchor. We're now in a situation on September 18th, in response to a question in QP, the Prime Minister himself said one of the three fiscal anchors for this government was a declining debt to GDP ratio. Don't believe me? Look it up in Hansard. All of a sudden in the budget, that anchor that we've had for 30 years, the most important fiscal anchor, is gone without any discussion whatsoever. And now we're in new territory where potentially we're going to be borrowing substantially more money the next time that there's an economic shock. And it's not for me to judge that. It is for me to point out that nobody has had a meaningful discussion around that.
Did you catch that? From the PBO, the most important fiscal anchor is gone. Now, all this is based on the PBO's new report about Carney's budget. It's really the most damning report on government finances that I've ever read. It really is a bombshell. So stay with me, folks. I want to take you point by point dissecting the PBO report on Carney's budget. So first, let's start with Carney's fake fiscal anchor of balancing the operating budget. Now, you know that Carney is not balancing the budget. He promises to balance the operating budget. So here's how meaningless that promise is. Here's a direct quote from the PBO report. Absent measures since the 2024 fall economic statement and measures announced in budget 2025, the day-to-day operating balance would be in a surplus position over 2026 to 2029. So translation, under Trudeau's crazy spending plan, the government would balance the operating budget next year. Okay, so if Carney wasn't increasing spending beyond Trudeau's already bloated budget, the government would balance the operating budget next year. But of course, Carney is promising to balance the operating budget by 2028. Now look, balancing the operating budget was always a fake fiscal anchor. I mean, you are not balancing anything if you continue to borrow tens of billions of dollars every single year. And Carney plans to borrow more than $78 billion this year. In fact, the closest thing Carney is willing to get to a balanced budget in 2029 is actually a $57 billion deficit, borrowing $57 billion. But let's keep reading on here, folks. Here's where the PBO report really cuts deep. The PBO report shows that government messaging about balancing the operating budget is not credible either. Okay, so the PBO report shows that the government won't even balance the operating budget by 2028. It will run an $18 billion operating deficit. So balancing the operating budget, always a fake fiscal anchor, and Carney won't even meet his own fake fiscal anchor. And here's where the PBO report really slices through Carney's creative accounting. Now, you've heard Carney say that he's splitting the budget into operating spending and capital spending. Well, Carney is including more spending in capital to make government finances look better than what they are. Again, here's another quote from the PBO's report. Carney's definition of capital investment expands beyond the current treatment in the public accounts and international practice. The PBO specifically points out that by including corporate income tax expenditures, investment tax credits, and operating subsidies, the capital framework blends policy measures with capital formation. Now, did you notice that, folks? Operating subsidies to businesses is included in Carney's definition of capital spending. But corporate welfare is not capital spending for taxpayers. Corporate welfare is a waste of taxpayers' money. And here's another bombshell from the PBO report. Quote, based on the PBO's definition, capital investments would total $217.3 billion over 2024 to 2029, approximately 30%, $94 billion lower compared to budget 2025. So here's what that means. Carney is taking $94 billion of operating spending, and then he's sticking a capital spending label on it to try to paint a rosier picture of government finances, right? $94 billion, that should not be considered capital spending. Carney is just sticking the capital spending label on it, right? Carney is trying to sell you and Canadians on this idea that he has to borrow a bunch of money for capital spending, yet the PBO report shows that Carney is slapping a capital spending label on $94 billion of spending that he shouldn't be. In fact, check out another quote here from the PBO report, okay? Under budget 2025, the deficit is projected to average $64 billion annually over 2025 to 2029, more than double that projected in the 2024 fall economic statement. This deterioration primarily reflects new day-to-day operating measures and increased provisions for liabilities. So it's not capital spending like Carney wants you to think that's driving all this borrowing. Carney's massive deficits, quote, primarily reflects new day-to-day operating measures and increased provisions for liabilities. Okay, one last quote from the PBO's report, okay? So we started this show with a clip from the parliamentary budget officer on CTV showing that Carney is changing the fiscal anchor from a declining debt to GDP ratio to a declining deficit to GDP ratio. Well, Carney has a less than 10% chance of even meeting his own watered down fiscal guardrail. According to the PBO, quote, based on PBO stress testing, there is a 7.5% chance that the deficit to GDP ratio will decline in every year over 2026 to 2029. This suggests it's unlikely that the government's declining deficit to GDP fiscal anchor will be respected. Like, what are we doing here? So here's my thoughts on everything going on around Carney's budget. Well, the parliamentary budget officer just sliced through Carney's creative accounting. Budget 2025, Carney's first budget, was a debt disaster. And government debt is spiraling out of control because government spending is spiraling out of control. And what does massive borrowing mean? Well, massive borrowing means that debt interest charges are now costing you more than $1 billion every single week, okay? Or think about it this way. The next time that you're standing out there in that checkout line, every single dollar that you pay in federal sales tax is going to pay interest on the federal debt. Instead of cutting the numbers, Carney needs to cut spending and cut the debt. All right, enough with the numbers, folks. Let's bring Chris Sims on the show. Stay tuned. Coming up next, it's Clips with Chris. All right, folks, my favorite segment of the show. We've got Chris Sims joining us. You know what time it is. It's time for Clips with Chris. Simmer, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's been a wild couple of days.
Yeah, it really has. And like, look, we're going to go over the big news stories of the week. And I think we just have to start here. And Chris, I want your big picture view on what happened with the budget vote. Everyone knows that the budget passed narrowly by a couple of votes, right? But I kind of want to go big picture here, right? Because over the last 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we've heard a lot of palace intrigue from the legacy media over, you know, what could happen with this budget vote. So Chris, put it all together for us. What did you make of this budget vote that just happened?
I wasn't surprised at all. And it's one of those things where I can't remember if you and I talked about this on the phone or on your show when I said, no, this is all theater. Even if the Bloc Québécois teams up with the Conservatives, they weren't going to be bringing down the government over the budget. There's also an argument that some people within the Conservative Party may not exactly want an election right this very second. They probably want to wait until spring, until after the leadership decision, after the leadership vote in January. So all those factors were playing into it. And then it combined it with things I'd already seen before. So I worked on Parliament Hill for close to 20 years. And this pains me to tell taxpayers this. It's basically high school with taxpayer-funded salary. Sorry. It is a huge, silly palace drama that happens all the time. And so what happened was they narrowly squeaked through with their budget vote. And the reason why this was such a big deal in the media's mind is because budget votes are automatic confidence votes. So if you lose a confidence vote as government, you then have to take that walk in the snow and go to the governor general and say, sorry, I can't hold government anymore. Can you please call an election? And so that is why there was all this hype and buildup around this. But again, I am not surprised in the least that it just narrowly passed for a few reasons. It was largely because the NDP, like they don't have a leader. Like if we had an election next week or whatever, who would be up on the debate stage? Would they have like 4.5 people clustered around the podium? Like things like that. And the fact that they have unmoney as a party right now, like that was not on. But I'm glad it was entertaining, I guess.
You know, what I'll say is I'm glad all the palace intrigue is over because now we can talk about, you know, the actual meat and potatoes here. Because,
bingo.
Like, look, there's a lot of talk around the political theater, but not as much talk as what should have been on the actual borrowing spree, right? Like, look, Carney's borrowing about $80 billion this year. Absolutely no plans to ever balance the budget or stop borrowing money. Borrowing tens of billions of dollars every single year. Interest charges on the debt essentially are going to cost Canadian taxpayers more than $1 billion every week, right? Or every dollar you pay in federal sales tax going to pay interest on the debt. By 2029, 13 cents of every dollar the government takes is going to be going to debt interest payments. So, you know what? Now that the political show is kind of over, I guess, they got to get back to work here and figure out a way to make this budget more affordable for taxpayers because as it is a debt disaster. Okay.
I just Chris, wanted to flag something just real quick. I really wanted to hammer that home because I know you'd be surprised by this, but I get asked this by people all the time, the debt interest. Okay. I get people saying, oh, well, we don't really pay that, or it's something that they defer until later. Like, that's a line item in the budget, right? That's like a bill coming due or an invoice that you have with your household that you despise. You don't like looking at, but you got to pay it, right? That debt interest cost for taxpayers every year?
Yeah, correct. It's okay. $56 billion this year. No, that's money that the government essentially has to pay to the bond fund managers on Bay Street. Because it's an interest charge, just like on your credit card bill, right? You also pay interest on the debt that you accumulate. Same thing happens with government. No, interest charges on the debt. Yeah, it's a good way to think about it, is a line item. And in that vein, I mean, the federal government is going to waste more money paying the interest than what it sends to the provinces in healthcare transfer. So no, absolutely, it is 100% a line item in the federal budget, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger because the government's borrowing like crazy.
Can I ask you a nerdy question? Another
okay.
one. Sorry, I've
Go
got
ahead,
you on
Chris.
The phone now.
I'm on the hot seat now.
I'm taking over.
Oh,
sorry.
Look how the turntables have turned.
There was like a DJ thing there. Okay, so that's an old reference. I got to ask this other thing because I don't have my degree in economics like some people on this show right now. This is what I legit don't understand. Is that how can Carney, who's got his like PhD in economics and stuff, like super educated person, I'm earnestly asking this, how can he be taking this so unseriously that he is spending money worse than Trudeau, that he's borrowing close to $80 billion? Remember when Chrystia Freeland supposedly quit over guardrails that were like tens of billions of dollars less than this? Again, that was a lot of theater and dramatics. But I got to ask you, and I don't even know the answer. I don't know what Franco's going to say here, folks. Okay. Is there like a line of thinking that is in like academic circles of economics where money doesn't really matter? I'm seriously asking. Is it like a social construct where you don't really need to balance budgets? You don't really need to show fiscal restraint, that math doesn't need to math and add up? Is that part of this? Like, is this like a philosophical approach he's taking to this? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to give you two answers. So okay. Number one, I mean, what is Carney's real history or big, you know, where was Carney's biggest roles when he was in government? Well, he was governor of central banks, right? In Canada, he was the governor of the Bank of Canada. Well, what's like the biggest thing that a Bank of Canada a governor does or a central bank governor does? Prints money. Like that is essentially, I hate this word tool, but that's essentially the biggest tool that a central bank has is the ability to print new money out of thin air, right? But the second one is that, yeah, you kind of nailed it where especially in I think it's happening in many of the different disciplines in universities, yeah. And it's also happening in economics where you've essentially a lot of these because I, you know, I've had multiple degrees in economics now, so unfortunately spent way too much time in these classrooms, but you essentially now have economics professors, not all of them, who have become useful tools of politicians who want to spend more money. Right. And one way or who just want cover. And you saw this with the carbon tax as well, where governments then use these pro carbon tax taxpayer funded academics as their cover to essentially spin the narrative that they want. And you've seen this in economics. It's not 100% new. I would just say what's more new over the last couple decades is that the profession in universities has much more shift towards like, oh, you could just spend more money. You know, government is not the problem towards the economy. It's one of the solutions. And unfortunately, I think that's completely bogus economics. But you certainly see that ideology definitely, I don't want to say taking root because it already has. But over the last number of decades, it's definitely becoming more of a popular ideology whereby you go back before that. And really the role of the economist was to be like, no, like you can't create new money out of thin air. Everything has an opportunity cost. Like that was really the core role of the economist. If you go back in time a little while now. So unfortunately, we've kind of come to this point where economics is another profession within universities that has gone down the bad route.
Okay, I'm finished getting my free mini course out of you. I always do this to him. Sorry, folks. But I'm smarter now.
Any more questions, Chris? What do we got?
I'm smarter now after having listened to that. No, really, like it does help. And I earnestly think it helps people understand too of why the heck is a dude that's this smart being this dumb with money.
And well, I think let me add one other thing here. So the profession of economics has really become, it has really gone down the road of more mathematics, more statistics, right? If you've been in economics degrees, you've heard probably econometrics, which is just like statistics applied to economics, but it's become less and less based on pure economic theory, like the real fundamentals of economics. And so essentially now you have a lot of these professors who are very good at math, who are very good at, let's just call it statistics, but who aren't very good at economic theory, right? Who don't actually understand the theory backing or that's supposed to be behind all that math and statistics, right? So it's really unfortunate to see it go down that route. Like the way that I like to think about statistics or mathematics and economics is the same way I like to think about it in baseball, right? Where like data analytics for a head coach, for example, should be a tool to guide decisions. It shouldn't be the end all be all, right? Like don't take out that starting pitcher when he's absolutely dicing, right? You got to trust your eyes. You have to trust your ability to make your decision. The data should just be to help you make those decisions. It shouldn't just be the end all be all.
I got him to say economics and baseball in the same sentence. Okay, sorry. You can go ahead with your questions now.
Okay, so Chris, let's. I want to shift gears. Actually, okay. I used to say ever so slightly, but no, I actually just want to shift gears. So at the beginning of our show, we really dove into the PBO's report on the budget, one of the most damning reports that I've really ever read on government finances. And the PBO, I think, is doing a great service for Canadians and for members of Parliament who rely on that analysis to know exactly what the government is doing. Well, Chris, like, I just want to read you this headline and get your take on this. But the headline is Ottawa seeking a permanent parliamentary budget officer with, quote, tact and discretion. Take it away.
Yeah, that's a shot for sure. There are certain things that happen in Ottawa for certain reasons. And this is definitely one of those things where they're trying to tell the interim parliamentary budget officer to mind his manners and to be more tactful. And to show more discretion. Now, usually you use a bunch of word salad in these job postings anyway, but tact and discretion, those stand out. And that's the reason why you're pointing them out, is because in the normal parlance, that is the terrarium of Ottawa and the job postings, they don't usually do that. And it's clearly a shot at Jason Jacques, basically saying, mind your manners. How dare you go to committee and say that our budgeting is unsustainable and stupefying? How dare you go on the mainstream media shows, the 5 o'clock shows, and sound the alarm over our crazy spending? How dare you go on Franco's show and tons of alternative media and start sounding the alarm in this same way? Basically, it's one of those things where they're trying to kind of send a signal of social shaming. It's almost as if you've shown up to a fancy party and you're not wearing the proper outfit. And you're now being judged on the fact that your shoes don't match your belt, rather than what you're actually saying or what you're bringing to the table. So they're trying to kind of look down their nose publicly at him and scold him. I've seen this happen before in Ottawa. What is super annoying about this, Franco, other than the obvious, is that Ottawa is supposed to be the people's capital. Ottawa is supposed to be full of public, I know, right? He's laughing. It's supposed to be full of public servants, okay? Peace, order, good government. It should look like one of those drab 1970s British like comedies of Yes Minister. That's how it ought to function. But no, they quite often consider themselves to be barons or dukes or something. And you, sir, have stepped on the wrong carpet. So, yeah, that's what that means.
That's good. Look, like, I'm really worried about this. Like, I think, like, what the government is trying to do is send a chilling effect, right, 100%. On accountability. Like, look, like, Canadians, we deserve a watchdog. We don't need a lapdog. But I think that's more what the politicians who want to spend money like crazy want, right? They want to muzzle the watchdog. Now, I think the biggest thing here is like what I'm concerned about is that it sends a chilling effect, right? Like, I think there's a clear message that's shot that's being sent out there by the government with this job posting. And another reason I'm so concerned is because the parliamentary budget officer, you know, with Jason Jacques, the interim PBO, but also the previous PBO as well, like they're producing some great reports, just cutting through all the noise and putting the facts on the dash, right? For Canadians. Like clearly there's been two big time reports from Mr. Jacques, the current interim PBO, this one that we've talked about throughout the show, but then also back in September. And remember we had the PBO on the on an earlier episode as well to talk about the previous reports, yeah. Where like, look, the PBO was in September pulling the alarm, you know, warning of the debt, warning of the massive borrowing, you know, using words and phrases like unsustainable, stupefying, something's going to break, everybody should be concerned. Well, like, if you're a politician in Ottawa and you don't want a budget watchdog calling your budgets unsustainable and stupefying, then don't produce unsustainable and stupid budgets, right? But again, like, the PBO has been doing such a great job for such a long time. You all remember the earlier years of the Trudeau government, you know, talking about the carbon tax and rebates, claiming, folks, that, oh, don't worry, you get more money back than what you pay in. And the PBO, with just the facts and the figures, was like, no, of course that's not correct. And when you look at all the different costs of the carbon tax was costing average families hundreds of dollars more than what they're getting back in rebates. And of course, these politicians who want to spin Canadians about, you know, whether it's their budgets, their debt, their different types of taxes, I'm worried that this sends a chilling effect really against one of the greatest offices that we have to hold the government accountable.
I must say that back in the day, at the end of the Chrétien-Martin era, then the role of the Auditor General, okay, was looming large. Okay, there was report after report. That's what was getting into the sponsorship scandal or ad scam. That, and it was just the facts. It was these, you know, straight down the middle, just the facts. And that's what really spurred the parliamentary press gallery into chasing this story down. And it was all by the numbers. And it was accountability for taxpayers, of course, because billions and billions of dollars was going out the door. In some cases, literally in brown paper bags. Like, it was wild then. And so, to your point, that was a tool, okay, that was basically a part of the mechanism that is Parliament, thank goodness, of our checks and balances, was the Auditor General in this case. I agree with you, Franco. Now, I find the most prominent and useful element of our engine there on Parliament Hill is the Parliamentary Budget Office. It's astonishing how clear and calm their work is. And you're right. All this time, for the last few years, they've had a Doberman on watch. And now the government doesn't like that so much, and they're looking for a happy little spaniel.
That's a great way to put it. Let's move on to our last clip with Chris. And it comes from the great online investigative news site, Blacklock's Reporter. The title is Planes, Limos, and an 85% increase. Chris, let me just set the stage and then I'll let you tee off. I'll just read a bit of the headline here. Pierre Tremblay, the $343,000 a year president of the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, billed taxpayers for limo rides, a stay at a French resort, hotel, and dozens of flights between Ottawa and Toronto rather than take the train. Access to information records show Tremblay hiked his travel and hospitality budget 85% this year, despite cabinet directives to cut unnecessary spending. These are tough times.
Unreal. So this is a perfect example, and kudos once again to Blacklock's Reporter. They do amazing work. I frankly don't know how they churn out so much research and data. They must not be glued to their phones. It's amazing. And so in this case, this isn't an elected member of government. This is part of what we call permanent government. This person essentially is a bureaucrat. Now, people would argue that we do need people to run a nuclear safety commission. We need people to keep an eye on that kind of stuff. Sure. But do they need to make more than $300,000? And on top of that, what you said there earlier, I found the most interesting. The guy, on top of making over $300,000 per year, also had a travel and hospitality budget of $100,000. Folks, picture the last time you booked planes and you had to book a hotel. Maybe even you splurged and rented a car, okay? Picture spending $100,000 doing all of that in like a calendar year. Now imagine saying, you know what? This isn't enough money. I need $85,000 more on top of that. And every nickel of this is taxpayers' money. Every nickel. And to give people perspective of how much over $300,000 is, if you are listening to our show, thank you so much. Remember to like and subscribe to this show. If you are a teacher, a cop, a nurse, a paramedic, a plumber, I'm kind of picking around the $100,000 a year mark, okay? Give or take, on average. Say you're one of those jobs. Triple what you're paid. Triple it. That's not enough. Okay, here's $100,000 for hospitality and travel. Still not enough. Here's another $85,000. And on top of that, it's literally limo rides. It's so frustrating because it gets right back to what I said initially, is that once government is here and it's baked in, they start acting like barons or dukes. And we just can't afford this. We have unmoney right now. Every nickel of that we're paying that dude is borrowed money plus interest. So it's just totally unsustainable.
Even if we could afford it, it's absolute BS. It's just them freaking living high on the hog on other people's money, right? It's just them taking other people's money so that they can live a life of extravagance. Okay, let me just end here, Chris, on one note. The government defended these expense claims because, of course the government did.
Of course.
The line of reasoning from cabinet, from the government, was that the government is helping build the best nuclear system in the world. Okay, well, let's just say that, let's just take that for granted, okay?
Let's
concede that point. Okay, well then, why is this individual still spending $635 a night in a hotel in Helsinki and billing taxpayers? Well, a $640 room in Paris. Why is Tremblay spending $9,000 on business class airfare to Vienna? Okay.
$9,000
in business class airfare during a 2024 trip to Vienna. Or why does he got to spend $14,000 on a trip to France, including a stay at a resort?
You know, I got to say.
So even if you concede the government's point, how would you explain this? Other people's money.
They can't. It's that he's living high on the hog, exactly to your point. And as you rightly point out often, I think right now the government is probably feeling like they don't have a leg to stand on because they keep taking pay raises. They've been taking pay raises all the way through. As you rightly pointed out, they took pay raises all the way through the lockdowns, not giving a single darn about it. And now we've got cabinet ministers. That guy, he's getting paid, Pierre Tremblay, the head of the Nuclear Safety Commission. Cabinet ministers are making around that amount of coin every single year, maybe for not doing as much. And so they probably feel a little bit sheepish about saying, you know what, you should really cut down on that, Pierre. Don't be jet-setting around. I will point out, isn't it fascinating that he happens to be traveling to the crown jewel cities of Europe and not, I don't know, rummaging around in places of northern India that are trying to get their nuclear power up and going, asking the Chinese, going to more, I don't know, rustic, rugged places, trying to get things started. It's super weird, Franco.
I see what you're getting at, Chris. I see what you're getting at.
Super
weird.
Ladies
and gentlemen, let's end it there. Chris, thanks for coming on the show today. All right, folks. That was Chris Sims, the CTF's great Alberta director. Now, look, that was kind of fun, I think, right? I know we spent a lot of time diving through the Parliamentary Budget Officer's report, but I just think it was so damning and so scathing that I just had to show you guys, like, we had to go beyond the headlines or even beyond, you know, the 500, 600 words in the legacy media. And I just wanted to dive through those details because, I mean, it is so damning on Carney's budget. So I hope you guys liked it. Actually, let me know, did you like us going through the PBO report point by point by point, or did you find it boring? Just let me know in the comments below if you liked it or you found it boring. And I might switch it up just depending on what you say. But folks, that's the Franco Terrazano show for this week. I'm Franco. I'm going to keep fighting those entitled politicians and bureaucrats. And I hope you're going to keep fighting with us. Until next time.